There's a guy named A.J. Svoboda, and he wrote a book, as many have lately, on Sabbath, but he tells a story of his four-year-old son learning how to swim. And what's kind of neat in it all is the little guy can hold his breath for 10 seconds. And the thing of that is so cool. So this little boy comes to him and says, "Daddy, how long can you hold your breath?" And he holds his breath for 60 seconds. And the little guy goes, says, "That's so cool." But he says, it doesn't matter if you're four and you hold it for 10 seconds or you're his age and you hold it for 60 seconds. When you hold your breath for a long time, you finally gasp for breath when you need it. He says, wouldn't it be interesting to watch someone go about their life holding their breath all the time and breathing only when they absolutely have to? What a difficult life that would be. And yet I wonder, if we're honest, if that is a bit of a description of life in 2023. We're a world that's always on. So often, the comics reflect what's going on in society, and I couldn't help but think how insightful. Pearls Before Swine is kind of one of my favorite as far as cultural, watching what's going on in culture. And in this one comic, Pig, who is kind of the simpler, happier of all the characters, is running saying, "Well, guys, I'm off to enjoy a relaxing vacation to revive my soul and lift my spirits." Coach says, "Where are you going? You don't even have luggage." Pig says, "Well, I'm just getting off social media for an hour." To which another character says, "I didn't know that was an option." Is it an option to turn off our phones for an hour? Is it an option to unplug from the 24/7 news cycle, the emailed expectations of the workplace? The challenges that we have to make ourselves better, is it even possible? It's funny, you know, we've tried to even in our world make it so much easier and create shortcuts. There's remotes for everything. Another comic, there's a retired couple, and unfortunately I can relate to their issue here. Grandpa's sitting with his remote saying, "This stupid TV remote doesn't work." Grandma says, "Well, maybe it's not the TV remote. Maybe it's the Blu-ray remote, or the Apple TV, or the garage door opener. Try the little gray one. Well, that'll start the TV." So he pushes it and the fan starts going. No, it's the ceiling remote. We're so crazily on that we can't even keep track of how we're trying to make it simpler. And it seems everyone's a little bit ahead of us, so how can we possibly stop? Just this week, one of the news notifications that came on my screen was from the New Yorker. And they ran a story this week called "Why Everyone Feels Like They're Faking It." That interested me. So I clicked and I read, and it's a lady who was reflecting on a study done now almost 50 years ago. In fact, it all began over 50 years ago. These two ladies, Pauline Clance and Suzanne Imes, very successful women at a prestigious university, and yet both of them felt like they didn't belong there, that someone was going to find out they were faking it. And they began to talk to other, their study was among women. They spent 5 years talking to more than 150 successful women, students, faculty members at several universities, professionals in the fields of law, nursing, social work. They wrote a paper called "The Imposter Phenomenon." They wrote that women in the sample were particularly prone to an internal experience of intellectual phoniness, living in perpetual fear that some significant person will discover they are indeed imposters. After not being able to publish for a while, their paper was published in 1978 in a psychological journal, and it took off. And from that has come the term imposter syndrome. Well, some 50 years later, this New Yorker author picked that theme up. And she found that that term, imposter syndrome, really struck a nerve, especially among millennial and Gen X women. She put out a call on Twitter for those who experienced imposter syndrome, just stuck it out there, and she was shocked how many people wrote back. One high-level publishing executive, "Do you have room in your inbox for 180,000 words? Graduate of a prestigious university said, "I wouldn't even go in the library for the first year. I didn't feel like I belonged." University administrator, "I grew up on a farm. Every time I had to go to some fancy event, I felt like," as he said, "people would see the hayseed in my hair." And on it went. And she said, even very successful people, one person who's written 11 books, very almost a household name in publishing, she wrote, "I've written 11 books, but each time I think, uh-oh, they're going to find out now. I've run a game on everybody. They're going to find me out." Another guy, and another successful author, gave a commencement address, described a fear of being busted by the fraud police, who he imagined showing up at his door with a clipboard to tell him he had no right to live the way he was. Imposter syndrome. Everyone else has it together, I don't, so I got to run. How on earth can I get off the treadmill? Because everyone else is ahead. So there's the question. Is there a way off the treadmill? This treadmill that drives me to more and bigger and better and keep up and build a name for myself. Well, the Bible has an answer. And it's as old as creation. And it's as relevant as an article that came out in the New Yorker last week. And the answer is Sabbath. Now, even as I say that, some of you are going, well, okay, I'll wait till the Sabbath practice is over and we'll get to one I can, you know, actually do. Because how on earth can I give any time, much less a day, to shutting down, letting go? But today we're going to see that Sabbath is actually an invitational expression of the heart of God for us to live the way we're designed to live. Now, we're right now talking about what are the practices that help us do what Jesus did. We say as a church, we are called to be in right relationship as people with God, with one another, and with our neighbor. Two practices so far. We dwell in the Word. We let the Word of God soak in us. We listen to God. We're going to talk about practices that call us into significant friendships, lives of forgiveness, practices of hospitality and looking at our neighborhood around us and the people around us locally in the world and having an impact. And I think all of us might go, well, okay, but I'm just busy with life. If we don't take time to pause and reorient our lives around God, the other practices are just going to be good intention. And so God calls us to Sabbath. Now, even as I say the word Sabbath, there's some of you might think, okay, it's that ancient, archaic command. There's been all kinds of rules around it. And I don't want to be stuck with some command of God that is an ought to and a have to and a religious, legalistic thing. But I think if we go to Scripture, we're going to actually see it's not a command that leads to legalism, but when seen right, is a command that is an invitation for us to actually get off the treadmill of drivenness, stop seeing ourselves as imposters, but who we really are in Christ, and to not just gasp for breath, but to take time to breathe, and indeed breathe in the very oxygen of heaven, so that all of life is reoriented. That that really, I think, is what Jesus gets at when he confronts those who are keeping the Sabbath religiously and legalistically. There's a fascinating passage here. Mark 2:23, Jesus and his disciples, Sabbath would have been Saturday, and they're just out for a leisurely walk. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples walked along, and they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees, the religious leaders, those who knew and kept the law scrupulously, said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? You're not supposed to harvest on the Sabbath." All they're doing is a few heads. They'd missed the point. So Jesus answered, "Have you never read what David did when his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for the priest to eat, and he also gave some to his companions." Jesus is saying, the law isn't about nitpicky little rules that you have to keep to earn something from God. And he says it's the same for the Sabbath. Verse 27. Then he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." We'll come back to that. It's not like God created a Sabbath day and then put humanity into it to woodenly make it the end of how it's supposed to look. But indeed, this concept of Sabbath is a gift for humanity. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Jesus did not abolish the Sabbath commandment, fulfilled it. He said, "I'm Lord of it." And what is the heart of Jesus, who calls us to Sabbath rest? I want to read something from the heart of Jesus, if you're comfortable. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And let this wash over you. Words of the Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke." It's an expression. "Take my teaching. Take my way of life upon you and learn from me. For I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke, my way of living, is easy, and my burden is light." Let us scribe your life. If not, maybe it's for lack of Sabbath. And again, we're not talking about a legalistic bunch of rules. We're not even talking about a specific day of the week. We're talking about a rhythm. And I want us to take some time over the next 2 weeks to explore this rhythm together. I'm quite impacted in this message from two sources. One is Mark Buchanan. He's spoken here. He has a book called The Rest of God, and it's profound. Another is some stuff by a guy named John Mark Comer. And if you're into podcasts and following Christian stuff and you're under 30, you've heard of John Mark Comer, very likely. He has a website. He's no longer pastoring his church. He has a website called practicingtheway.org. And in it, there's a number of practices that he actually spends like 4 weeks. And if you and some friends or your small group want to really get into Sabbath, he's got a 4-week thing on Sabbath. So it's Mark Buchanan and John Mark Comer, as they've looked at this, and they have drawn from the tradition of many other writers, old and new, to help us think about Sabbath. So this morning, I want to introduce Sabbath by giving what I think are three very important biblical pieces of what it means to be people who practice Sabbath. Number one, what is it? Well, Sabbath is a day each week And again, legalistically, it would have been Saturday. Most Christians in our world, because they have Sunday off and because Sunday's the day Jesus rose from the dead, do Sunday. Others work on Sunday. I don't Sabbath on Sunday. I tend to work. It's a day each week. In fact, for a lot of people in the world, it's the only day I work. So Sabbath is one day each week that God has set aside for us to stop and reorient our lives to Him. There's an old story. Gordon MacDonald has a book called Restoring Your Spiritual Passion. Story of a group that back in Africa before a lot of development needed to trek through a jungle to get where they needed to go, and they found some guides from a local tribe. And of course, these were people from the West, and they were in a hurry, and they told the guys, we've got to get there as fast as we can. So that first day, they made great time trekking through the jungle, and they thought, we're going to get there on schedule, and they're happy. They get up early the next morning, and the guides wouldn't go. They just wouldn't. And of course, our Westerners are all uptight, and they say to them, why not? We got to get there. We got a deadline. And finally, one of the guides said, well, yesterday we went too fast. And today, for a while, we're going to stop and let our souls catch up to our bodies. Now, I don't know if these guides had come to know Christ and the true Creator, but certainly what had been made known to them was the wisdom of the Creator. There's times we need to not only let our souls catch up to our bodies, but our bodies catch up to how God designed them to operate. Where do we see that? Right back to creation. After God creates, we read Genesis 2, 2 and 3. By the seventh day, God had finished the work He had been doing. So on the seventh day, He rested from all His work. The word rested in the Hebrew is Shabbat. He Sabbathed. It's a word that literally means to sever, to cease, to desist, to rest, to stop. And it doesn't say God stopped so He could catch up on His inbox, because while He was creating, there were a whole lot of emails that came in and He finally had a day to catch up. Didn't say that. He stopped. He rested. Let's keep going. Then God blessed the seventh day. Blessed. What does bless mean? Well, it means a lot of things. The theological word book of the Old Testament, that sounds kind of impressive, talks about how one of the connotations of to bless is to endue on someone, wish on someone. God actually has the capacity to put on someone that which is necessary for quality of life. To bless is to wish you quality of life as God created it. Fruitfulness. John Mark Comer looks at that connotation and he says, bless has this connotation of to make joyful, happy, to delight. I think this is what Ben is getting at when he said, 6 days God created, and the seventh day He looked back and He said, I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to delight in it, and I'm creating a day for my creation to enjoy everything. Those humans, they got a day to just enjoy it, to delight. Bless the seventh day. And then we go on. And He made it holy. He made it holy. Now, the word holy, we get it a little bit mixed up. Holy in the Old Testament was set apart. It was not common, okay? I think one way to understand it, there were utensils they used in the temple that were called holy. You didn't use them for regular meals. You used them in the temple. They were set apart. He said, this day is set apart. John Mark Comer talks about how in those days, other religions would have had holy set apart places. That's where the gods lived. You had to go to the shrine. You had to go to the mountain. You had to go to this place or that place because these were common and then those were holy. But we have a God who inhabits the universe. It's all his. Now, certainly dwelt in the temple, but the Lord said, really, the temple is the universe. So he created a time set apart, especially holy, to be in the presence of God, to worship, to reorient our lives. Worship is a response of all I am to all God is. It's a day in which we bring all we are before God, having put everything else aside for a while. We delight in what he's done. And we let him bring us back to what life's all about. John Mark Comer takes this verse and he says there's really four movements to Sabbath. The first is stop. The second is rest. But I'm not finished. Let me let you in on a secret. You and I will never be finished till we get to heaven. Always something more to do. Always something more. Can we stop? Can we rest? And then it's about delighting, actually enjoying creation. There's a satirical website, not even Christian, and the title is The Man Who Almost Enjoyed Himself. Let me read this for you. It's a satire, okay? Okay. Marshall Platt, 34, came tantalizingly close to kicking back and having a good time while attending a friend's barbecue last night, before remembering each and every one of his professional and personal obligations, backyard sources confirmed. While he chatted with friends over a relaxed outdoor meal, Platt was reportedly seconds away from letting go and enjoying himself, when he suddenly was crushed by the full weight of work emails that still needed to be dealt with. An upcoming wedding he'd yet to buy airfare for because of an unresolved issue with his Southwest Rapid Rewards account and phone calls that needed to be returned. Platt, who reportedly again sunk into a distracted haze after coming off the razor's edge of experiencing genuine joy, fully intended to now go through the motions of talking with friends and appearing to have a good time, all while he mentally shopped for a birthday present for his mother and made a silent note to call his bank about a mysterious recurring $19 monthly fee that he had recently discovered on his credit card statement. Ouch. Might God actually want us to delight? Might God actually want us to ask the question, how does he give me life? How's he designed me? I can take a walk and not worry about things. I can play with my kids and forget the emails and the screens. I can put aside my studying. Delight. And then worship. That's the fourth move. It's worship. Now, when you think about worship, again, it's this reorienting. It means that the other 6 days are impacted because of the seventh day. Here's what Sabbath is not, all right? Back in 2013, police in Brooklyn made a drug bust. And they were on to this group because they followed their emails, and they thought it kind of funny that here was a gang that sold drugs that was very religious about keeping Sabbath. All right. On their texts that were being monitored on Friday night, because they kept Saturday, they said, "We are closing at 7:30 on the dot Friday evening. We'll reopen Saturday evening at 8:15. So if you need anything," these are drug dealers, "if you need anything, you have 45 minutes to get what you want." They called their sting only after sundown, the police. You totally miss the point. If I'm taking this day and it doesn't bleed into how I live the next six, and I take a day and it reorients me to the next six. So what is Sabbath? It's this day, and if that sounds too daunting, it's a period of time, a good chunk, where I stop, I rest, I delight, and I worship. Which leads to the second truth. If that's what it is, God calls me to be intentional about it. We're called to be intentional in how we treat the day. It's one thing, and this is all of it with the practices, it's one thing to say, God made the day. It's another thing to say, I'm going to reorder my life around what he created the day for. It's funny how a lot of us kind of think, well, okay, other people need it. Can't help but think of some people who driving down the road and they see a fairly expensive car pulled over, and they think, well, let's go help. And here's a guy, he's in a hurry and he's all frustrated because he's run out of gas. And he said, I've got to get to a meeting and I thought I had enough gas. Well, this couple just happened to be the prepared type. They had a gallon of gas with them and they poured it in, and he thanked them profusely and away he went. Barely had time to say thank you. They get back in their car. Guess what? 15 miles down the road, there's a car on the side. It's the same car. They had passed a few gas stations on the way, and it was kind of hard to believe. There he was. And they went to him, and he said, yeah, I ran out of gas. I really thought the gallon would get me where I needed to go. My car doesn't need refueling. Yes, it does. We all do. And so God put in the Ten Commandments. This is one of the big ten, okay? It's the only one we see as optional. Thou shalt not murder. Well, okay, maybe not. Sabbath? Well, maybe. But let's just go read it, okay? The Ten Commandments are in two places. They're given at the beginning of the children of Israel as they're in the desert at Mount Sinai. They're given at the end, like I think it's like 38 years later. They're on the brink of going into the promised land. The first is Exodus, the second is Deuteronomy. So here's Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Remember, the word is bring to mind. Be conscious of the fact this day is unlike the others. All right, we go to Deuteronomy chapter 5. We'll pick it up at verse 12. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor, do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. One little change. Remember, observe. Observe, as they're about to go into the promised land, and it won't be quite, like, up till then, manna has fallen from heaven for 6 days. The seventh day, it won't. So they're going to have to get a little more intentional. Observe. The word observe means keep watch over, guard. Pay attention. It's kind of like June 9th for me, okay? Growing up, June 9th was a day on the calendar, one of 365. And then in 1984, Jeannie and I were married on June 9th. Now I need to guard it. It is now set apart from the other days. It is a day where I need to remember my relationship with Jeannie in a special way. It better not be the only day. But it's not a day to forget. And while we may not have that exact day, there is something we try to do around that day to remember the specialness of the relationship God has given us. Remember how special the relationship you have with God. Observe it. Let it impact your relationship with others and your neighbor. We are called to intentionally keep it. Now, as we think about that, I think for some of us, especially if we grew up in the church, we can still go back to, but keeping it became so weird. I grew up being told things I couldn't do, and yet they were such life-giving things. In some of my reading, I actually found out that there were a couple cities in the United States that said in the baseball league, like we're talking the pro leagues, there could not be a pitch after 6 o'clock on a Sunday because of Sunday evening service. And it, whoa. And others, it was like you couldn't play in certain ways or do certain things. Is that what guarding it means? And I go back to Mark 2 to say no. It's not what guarding it means. Jesus said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. You know, it's interesting that man was made for the Sabbath. I think that's the legalism. It's not like God said, here's a day and here's all these rules. It was the rules that grew up, the human rules around that, to say if you're really holy, these are the things you have to do and these are the things you shouldn't do on Sabbath. No. But I think in our day and age, the pendulum is going so far, we need the first part. This Sabbath is actually made for us. Because God knows that we need it. Even the early Christians, and this is some of the debate, that Sabbath is part of the Old Testament and Jewishness. Jesus here is in Mark. Okay, this is a New Testament. I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. And again, what's changed is no longer does it have to be Saturday, that's for sure. In fact, by the end of the first century, you've got John on the island of Patmos saying, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, which was understood to be Sunday. Because Christians knew that it was the first day of the week, Jesus rose from the dead, and this is our celebration of new life. So it just makes so much sense on Sunday to come together as a people of God and remember we are resurrection people, and it is the death and resurrection of Christ and all that he is and all that he shows us that needs to orient our lives. It all makes sense. But it's more than going to church. And again, it's not that, you know, for a lot of you, Sunday makes sense to be your Sabbath. For others, you work on Sunday. There's other things going on. And we need a day to actually delight, rest, delight, and worship. So now, the rest of this week and next week, I want to get a little bit more practical about that. What indeed do we do? Well, let me put it together with something that is so helpful that Mark Buchanan talks about. And I think when we get this, it starts to put all the other pieces together a little bit. The Sabbath, number 3, is a day to be restored in this truth. The truth of whose we are, and because of that, the truth of who we are. How we need to remember whose we are and who we are. Because we have a world telling us we belong to the driven messages of our culture. And we had better keep up, because if not, our identity is imposter. And Jesus says, no, you belong to God. And because of that, your identity is loved. Let's talk about 2 things that God is as revealed in the command to have Sabbath. By far, the command to Sabbath is the longest of the 10. And other than that, remember and observe, they're identical except for the last verse. So let's look at the last verse of each and what they say and how very practical this gets as we start to think about keeping Sabbath. Exodus chapter 20, the last verse in the Sabbath command is verse 11. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. He roots Sabbath in creation. That means that when we take this rest and we delight and we worship, we look up and we see whose we are. We are people belonging to the Creator. Everything we see, he made. Who are we? We're created. And that has a lot of implications that I'm going to look at in a bit. Okay, so Exodus, rooted in the fact that God is creator, that's whose we are. And we are created. That's who we are. Let's go to Deuteronomy, because this is fascinating. Deuteronomy 5, verse 15, it ends this way. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath. Whose are we? We belong to the giver of freedom. We belong to the liberator. Who are we? We are freed. We are freed from the bondage of sin. We are freed from the bondage of the messages that call us imposters and drive us. And we're going to talk about that a lot next week. But we remember whose we are. We are people of the Creator and the Liberator, the one who made us, the one who saved us, the one who knows us best and loves us, the one who redeemed us and saves us and walks with us. Who are we? We are created. Created in the image of God. We are freed. If we receive what Jesus did, we're no longer slaves to sin. And we're no longer under the tyranny of Egypt, which kind of stands for a culture that pushes us and is forcing us into this driven mold where even successful people feel like imposters. Sound good? The next week we're going to go more into that, but just to get us going, let's just take a little bit of time. Because God is a good creator, we are created. Whose are we? The creators. Who are we? Created. What does that mean? Well, it means, first of all, we're human. And because we're human, we need the rhythm provided by rest. God made it that way. John Mark Comer talked about probably the most specific time in history when humanity tried to rearrange the seven-day week. After the French Revolution, 1793, there was a sense of we're getting rid of religion. I did a little other research on it, and a church history paper that is on a JSTOR, which is a credible work, a credible website. This guy says that the central goal was not only to destroy an old faith, but supply a new faith, which would be in conformity with the new age, to give supreme significance to the rise of science and the growth of the state and the improvement of civilization. Basically, they're saying, we're not going to follow this seven-day creation that part of religion. We're going to create a 10-day week, three tens in every month. That's the way they set it up. And yet, John Mark Comer says, what happened? Disaster. The economy crashed. The suicide rate skyrocketed. Productivity went down. Another website quoted an American historian who said France only kept a 10-day week around for 12 years because of its extremely disappointing results. During these years, French society saw a stark increase in injuries, exhaustion, illness, work animals that collapsed and died at astounding rates. We are human. We are created to need rest. And in an amazing way, God knows. 6 days, be productive. Day 7, put it aside, stop. And you're going to be way more productive in the end. We're human. We need the rhythm provided by rest. Secondly, we're made for relationships. We're made for relationship with God, with one another, and with our neighbor. So often in our world, efficiency, productivity makes us use people instead of enjoy people, know people, listen to their stories, no time for their story. They're a unit of productivity. I'm a unit of productivity. No, I'm a person created in the image of God for relationship. Where can you set aside competitiveness and comparison and productivity to enjoy God? For many people, solitude is a part of Sabbath. But I think for all of us, is there also time for people? I think what the Jews teach us in their observation is they feast. They often start the night before. Well, not often, they do. They start the night before. What would it look like to start Sunday on Saturday night and feast together? Have friends over. Have your family. Take time. Enjoy. Relationship. And then the third, we find our true life in God. If He's our creator and we're created, He's designed us all a little differently. And so the question becomes, not what does everybody have to do to keep Sabbath, but how has God wired me? Do I need solitude? Is that what renews me? Time in nature? Time playing? Playing with my kids? Join friends. How has He wired me to be renewed? Starting to get hungry for it? So how might we practice this practice? We're going to talk more about it next week, but for this week, here's my assignment, should you care to receive it? I'm encouraging you to have a conversation this week around this question. What would it look like to take the time to get off the treadmill of productivity and make choices to provide God the context to renew me, to renew us, spiritually, emotionally, physically, relationally? What would it look like? Given your schedule, what day might it be? If you got a rotating schedule, it might rotate. That's where we get off the legalism. If this is brand new, start somewhere. If you're single, find a friend or two. Have the conversation. What would it look like? If you're a student, what does it look like to put the books aside? Not so that I abandon them the other 6 days, but that I trust that God's in control of my education. And maybe I read something I want to. What does it look like, again, if you're single, to find the relational network on that day? Maybe you're a couple, you're married, you have kids. I think it's important that we talk because sometimes we're wired different. And for couples, it might mean there's things we do together. We go to church together. We maybe process some things together. Maybe we give each other some space for a while. But we talk about it. What does it look like to be restored? What do we need to do together? What do we want to do together? What are we putting off until we're finished? And then after our 60th anniversary, we'll still have things to do. How do we delight couple, and one another, families, it gets a little more interesting. You have young families, grace, 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 grace. But what would it look like for your kids to say, there is a day a week where my daddy played with me, and he threw his phone away. That might be where it starts. Some families, kind of thirds. Good chunk of the day that we spend together as a family, and we play and we do the things that we love, but then we give each other space. I'll take the kids for a bit. Then you take the kids. But you have to talk about it. Okay? So that's this week's assignment. Take the time to have the conversation. What would it look like? To take the time to get off the treadmill of productivity and make choices to provide God the context to renew us, to renew me, spiritually, emotionally, physically, and relationally. Because Sabbath is not a wooden, legalistic, archaic tradition. It is a practice. One of the Ten Commandments given as invitation for us. Be reoriented and restored around truly whose we are, and because of that, who we are. Let's pray.